This is Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, how you doing today? I'm Steve Chiotakis. California's stay-at-home order lasts well into May, but state officials are looking to take baby steps, just little tiny steps toward reopening some businesses. Today, Governor Gavin Newsom said Californians have been doing their part to help contain COVID-19.
You, individuals, through the extraordinary behavior, millions of you, because you have practiced physical distancing, the stay-at-home orders, you have bent the curve in the state of California. The models have changed because of your behavior.
So kudos to you. And the governor laid out the state's plans to start returning life to some semblance of normalcy. Joining me now to talk about Newsom's plans is Nicole Nixon, who covers politics for Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Nicole, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. So what specifics did the governor give about when this is going to happen, what it's going to look like? I mean, he's not just going to, you know, unveil or throw open the curtains.
Right. He was very reluctant to give a hard date. What he laid out today were sort of 6 points that they need to reach or realize where they are before they even think about reopening the economy, which is the big question that everybody has been wondering and been asking. It was a month ago tomorrow that he did that first order to close bars and wineries. So these 6 things are like questions about how can we monitor and protect vulnerable people? What is the ability of the hospital system to handle surges and the ability to develop treatments and vaccines? These are questions that we've been hearing about and thinking about, and they're very rooted in sort of science and public health rather than just wanting to get back to work.
And in his news conference today, he was very obviously cautiously optimistic about the fact that ICU beds, the numbers have slowly actually declined in some cases. Hospitalizations have been pretty much steady. So some things that we've gotten used to over the past month or so, Nicole, social distancing, mask wearing, telecommuting, working from home, things like that, those are not likely to go away anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. In fact, he said that, you know, as the state thinks about these 6 things, it's not going to go back. He's not going to flip the switch, is the analogy he used. It's not a light switch. It's more of a dimmer. So yes, hospitalizations and ICUs are flattening, he said. But once they start to decline, which may not be for a few more weeks, that's when he'll start to think about getting people back to work. And even then, yes, we'll still be wearing masks in public. He used the example of a restaurant. You walk into a restaurant, you may see fewer tables. Your waiter might be wearing gloves. Your temperature might be checked at the door. So definitely not going back to life as we knew it just about a month ago.
These are things that are being done in China, in South Korea, and other places that have really gotten a grasp of it. The governor also, we talked about this plan, the 6-part plan that would gradually bring everything back. The top of that list was expanding testing. Where are we on that?
Well, he's talked about expanding testing for several weeks now. There was a pretty big backlog that they were able to get through a week or two ago. But it's still not the capacity to test, you know, mass test is not where we want it to be. So they've talked about that at the end there. Sounds like they're hopeful that can be where it needs to when they start thinking about making these decisions.
The more testing there is, obviously, the better idea of where the people are who have the infections, where they can isolate people, things like that. I know, Nicole, there's a delicate balance between Newsom and other governors need to strike between the good of public health, the economic needs of the country, and he keeps calling California a nation state, right? How is he going to thread that needle?
Well, there's a lot for him to think about with a state this big. He's been very sort of congratulatory of people following these stay-at-home orders, and he directly attributes the fact that we're not in a worse situation to that. But yeah, with a state of 40 million people, it's interesting to have heard him talk about the nation state. This partnership with other West Coast governors that was announced yesterday is sort of an interesting regional way that they can coordinate opening businesses, you know, in a region of the country. And he also hinted that other Western governors might sign on to that, too. But yeah, it's this very delicate balance of public health. He said that he's not going to make a political decision that could put public or put lives at risk and end up putting the economy even more at risk. But at the same time, like Dr. Sonia Angel mentioned, this can't go on forever. The economy is being strained and it's putting a lot more pressure on people in poverty.
Yesterday, the president pushed back against governors who were coming up with their own plans. President Trump saying that his authority was total. Today, Newsom demurred on that question from a reporter, said he didn't want to go there, avoiding any feud with Trump. Let's hear a little bit about what Newsom had to say.
This phase is one where science, where public health, not politics, must be the guide, where we must be open to argument, interested in evidence, where we cannot be ideological in any way, shape, or form in terms of how we approach a condition that changes on an hourly and daily basis.
And that's essentially, Nicole, the threading of the needle, right? Not getting into politics, trying to circumvent, I guess, you know, ideology and things like that going forward. And we've got to wrap it up there. I want to thank you, Nicole Nixon, who's a reporter, political reporter for Cap Radio up in Sacramento. Nicole, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
We continue on with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's easier now than ever to get booze delivered right to your door. Alcohol sales are up, cannabis sales are up, and the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control is allowing restaurants to deliver margaritas to go in Los Angeles County. Mayor Eric Garcetti is even encouraging it. For struggling addicts in recovery, that may make abstaining even harder during these stressful times. Luckily, AA meetings and recovery treatment programs are alive and well. They're just virtual now, like almost everything else. On the front lines of recovery is Dr. Matthew Polacek. He's a director at the Betty Ford Center in Los Angeles, a clinical psychologist. Hi, doctor. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Patty Schemmel is a former drummer for the band Hole and author of Hit So Hard, which chronicles her struggle with addiction. And thank you, Patty, for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to start with you, Patty, because you're a recovering addict. I know a big part of recovery is going to those meetings, talking to other people who are in the same boat, talking with a sponsor, getting together with a sponsor. But alas, these are different times. How are you staying connected?
Yeah, pretty much early on, you know, always there's the support group I have, you know, and then also how do we get to a meeting? So immediately we all reached out to each other, and then, you know, there's virtual meetings. So my first virtual meeting, a Zoom meeting, was a bit of a learning curve. And, you know, not knowing about, you know, that you have to mute yourself and then how it sets up. And, you know, so I felt like a virtual newcomer, which was good because it was a new way to get the message. It's a bit different. So, and also, I needed to hear other alcoholics talk about how they were feeling and connect, because that's the thing with us, is that, you know, it's reaching out to another alcoholic and, you know, and hearing what their fears are or their solution. And being
it's
of
so
service.
Interesting to me. It's interesting to me because, you know, this isolation will save us in a time of pandemic, but it's also so destructive,
right?
In a situation where you need people to actually help you.
Yeah, that's the number one thing. That's the thing for me is I want to isolate. I mean, that's where I naturally go. But, you know, with, you know, in recovery, you can't. And isolating to save your life, of course, but right now, but also, you know, there's your brain and there's your head and there's your thoughts, and it just goes off.
How are you doing personally, Patty?
I feel like, you know, when I talk to my support group and my community, you know, we've been through some tough stuff, and we can get through this. So, you know, being a little low on toilet paper is not a big problem. If you know, you know,
comparatively so, of course.
Yeah.
Matthew, are you hearing from your patients with substance abuse issues? They're finding it fairly easy to connect with each other during these meetings?
Yeah, you know, we've had a big switch over to virtual care with our Recovery Go app, and we've had over 1,300 patients actually switch over to the virtual. And so we've seen really positive stuff. But I was smiling when I was listening to Patty, because the opposite of addiction is community. And, you know, substance and mental health challenges right now, we're already at a crisis level before this pandemic. So we're confronting two public health crises. But when Patty was talking, I was smiling because, you know, she really gets it. It's the fact of the connection in the community, and it's just critical. I mean, it's like any chronic disease, you've got to check in, and if you have diabetes, you got to check your insulin levels, and some people check it all the time, and some people space it out. But with substance use disorder being a chronic disease, you got to check in with your sponsor and the people in the halls with you in the AA rooms and loved ones. And Patty gets it, and it put a smile on my face to hear what she was saying.
You have so much to talk about, right? The fact that, you know, everyone's going through this at the same time. And so, you know, while you're a recovering addict and you have that in common, you also have this in common, which is we're all under these safer at home orders. We all have to deal with this. We're all low right. on toilet paper. We're all, you know, it's a camaraderie,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And for us, it's also, you know, the first thing you think about is, your recovery and then also being of service, so looking out beyond yourself to help somebody. So where can I help right now to get out of, you know, my own ego today and get into a different state of mind where I can be of service to someone who might need it, because we're all in it now, you know? Yeah.
I also think, you know, being quarantined at home, family members are starting to see more red flags of like loved ones, addiction and mental health issues up close that they might not have seen, you know, and, you know, family members who may have had passing concerns about a loved one or a child or substance use, you know, may now they're really confronted face to face now with the issues that need to be addressed. So, you know, the power of addiction becomes even more evident when a loved one can't stay away, you know, and has to leave during a quarantine to be with their using friends, or a dealer comes to the house, or, you know, alcohol being restocked. So, you know, it becomes much clearer when a loved one doesn't have kind of healthy coping mechanisms.
Do you fear relapses in a situation like this, where people who are recovering addicts are tempted with the booze flowing everywhere, or perhaps, you know, feeling more vulnerable and obviously having a tough time of it?
Well, I prefer the word reoccurrence, but, you know, I think the key really is, like Patty was saying, you know, she wants to reach out to people. She's there for people. And I think that's the key, is that people have to realize in a time like this that, you know, isolation is the enemy, and really reaching out to others. So, you know, there's the concern of reoccurrence, but like any chronic disease, a reoccurrence could happen. But, you know, the bigger thing, I think, that we've got over 20 million Americans that are in recovery. 20 million. I mean, over 20 million. So there's people out there that want to help. There's great treatment out there. So, you know, we don't have a cure for a substance use disorder, but we've got great treatment. And so I think that between, you know, the recovery community and between treatment, there's hope there. There's, you know, places where people can go.
Patty, what does reaching out look like to people who, you know, obviously are going through a tough time, or your social structure, the people that you're meeting with in your AA meetings on Zoom? What does that look like? And how have you participated to help people get through this?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's my, you know, sober group of friends. And then, you know, we reach out to each other. But also, now that we're doing virtual meetings on Zoom, I've been able to see friends in San Francisco and go to a meeting in San Francisco and see a group, you know, that I, you know, when I lived in San Francisco, that was one of my home groups. So now I can go and sit in on that meeting. And I went to a meeting in New York yesterday. And so that's a gift, kind of cool to be able to see those friends and hear what they're going through from where they are and just reconnect. I definitely have been to a lot more meetings virtually in the last month than I have in a while. And that's been good to, you know, reset my recovery. And also, yeah, because now, I definitely got real comfortable in just kind of not going out and staying in and not getting, being active in my recovery. So this was like a cool sort of new way to do it, to go to a virtual meeting.
My thought is just, you know, that and I've noticed, you know, that I'll break, I have a lot of wine in my house. I've not had a problem with alcohol myself, but it's like, you know, I'll drink maybe a little more wine to take the edge off. And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I wonder how many other people are doing that as well. And maybe who, you know, don't have the coping mechanisms, you know,
predisposition.
Or the gene. That's right. Yeah. Genetic predisposition. Well, exactly. And so
I feel like it's not the temptation of going out and using it's, you know, switching addictions. Like food is off the hook right now for me. I can't.
This is the stress eating.
Yeah, this is the, you know, that's, and that, you know, that feels good, just like drugs do, you know.
Yeah, it's a lack of healthy outlets.
Right, and so that is really familiar. I use food the way I did drugs, you know. Yeah, and with not a lot of activity, you know, that Ben and Jerry's pint feels good.
It's right there. It's, you know, yeah. And you're still, I mean, the grocery store still has it. I mean, we think.
Yeah.
So they still deliver it via Instacart or whatever.
Yeah. And that's my disease. You know, it kind of works my brain and says, well, it's okay to eat. You got to eat.
But you still have to make good choices or try and make good choices the best you can. And I want to thank you both for talking about your stories. Patty Schemmel, her memoir is called Hit So Hard, former drummer of the band Hole. Patty, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Matthew Polacek, director of Betty Ford Center here in Los Angeles. Doctor, thank you for your time as well.
Thanks for having me.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The pandemic, of course, is keeping you physically away from your family, from your friends, from work, perhaps. Everything's happening online these days, and that includes the world of courtship.
The good news in dating right now is it's happening. What we're seeing is an increase in both new users and engagement.
That's Melissa Hobley. She's an executive at OkCupid, and she says online dating services and dating apps have seen a boom. People are matching 30% more often and having longer conversations. Well, communication is at a premium now, whether you're starting up something new or getting closer in quarantine than you ever expected. KCRW's Jerome Campbell has more about how the coronavirus has changed our dating lives.
Who would have imagined quarantine could be so romantic? Melissa Hobley says the industry only sees this level of swiping when people set New Year resolutions to find bae. Women are saying yes to men way more than usual. Queer users are matching with more varying sexual and gender identities. And users are also considering long-distance partners outside of their cities.
I think there's an openness to friendship and just someone you might, you know, get cocktails with, maybe may or may not be a love connection, but just an openness to connection and a desire to make people feel supported in this crazy time, which is really, really beautiful.
Along with more users on the app, Hobley says it's a lot easier to strike up a conversation when people are inside for the same reason.
This is a time that everyone in the world has actually got this issue on their brain. And so what that actually can mean in a dating app is you've all got something in common, and that never, ever happened.
It's almost become the cliche thing to talk about.
That's Rob Hayes. He's 35 and works at a Lowe's in Chino. He reactivated his dating profiles about 5 months ago and is looking to form a long-term relationship.
He'll say things like, how's your quarantine going? And what are your plans to get through this quarantine? Are you looking for somebody to quarantine with? You know, it's the new thing, quarantine and chill.
Rob calls himself old school because he likes to talk to women on the phone before they meet. So the prolonged pandemic courtship is working for him. In the last month, he matched and talked to twice as many women as he did before the pandemic. He also met a special someone, a woman who shares his love of 80s music and 90s TV shows. He says their conversations progress much faster than they would have before the coronavirus because they had less to distract them.
Now during the quarantine, it forces us to try to build a relationship outside of the physical realm. If you can't talk and have a good time and have fun, is it really going to go anywhere?
And when the virtual sparks formed, Rob says he popped the big question.
I just say, you want to have a video date?
Video dates are becoming more popular now, and dating tech companies are noticing this shift and are pushing in-app video capabilities. And Rob says women love it.
And they're like, oh my God, that's so cute, you know, or, you know, that sounds fun, you know, a video date. What are you going to bring? And I'll be like, oh, I'll bring the pizza or I'll bring, you know, the wine.
Rob admits the experience is kind of strange. You throw on a nice shirt to appear as if you're not also wearing sweatpants, warm up your nicest frozen cuisine, pop open a bottle of wine, and gaze longingly at a screen for a couple of hours. But hey, it's what you gotta do right now. And Rob admits that he might not have caught the attention of his current crush outside of the pandemic. He says the video dates feel less formal, and they can be more of themselves. Now, he can't wait to see her in person.
I wanna talk to her. So 2 to 3 weeks, a month, 2 months come down the line, I'm at like, oh my goodness, I can't wait to see you.
Some people are trying to date, not on video. But it's just as true that communication matters. Meet Angie Smith.
So my relationship to dating apps is very loose. I don't hold a very high value to my interactions online until I meet someone face-to-face.
She's a 33-year-old social worker who lives in the South Bay. She has a very laissez-faire approach to dating apps and says less than a quarter of her matches continue past a first date. But lately, she's been taking matches on the apps a bit more seriously. Just before the stay-at-home order was in place, she met someone. Conversation was fine. He piqued her interest, and so the next step was a first date. People were still out in public at the time, but there wasn't a lot of choices about where to go.
So we had talked about going to the beach, and he had a friend that was near the beach, and it was very crowded.
So Angie offered to park near her house. He was cautious.
Mostly we walked around the park. We would like avoid where other people were. It was very intentional and very mindful walking to like our awareness. We sat on a tree and we sat on a bench. There was space between us, but not 6 feet of space.
Angie says the date went well. They talked the next day and then he ghosted. Angie says she reached out to talk again. He said he was busy.
I mean, you told me that you work from home. You also told me that I was the first person that you've seen at the park in the last 11 days. So where have you been at for the last 5?
Pandemic or not, people can be trash. If it's easier for casual daters to avoid communication than it used to be, it's harder for those already in relationships. And some of those conversations can get pretty deep. Sydney Martin and Dion Goodrich have been dating for 4 years. They usually don't have much time together, a few phone calls during the week and some hours on the weekend.
I'm about like an hour and 10 minutes on rush hour, at least trying to drive to her. So that's the most challenging part, just trying to find a schedule to where we can still feel like we can see each other often enough.
Now, most of their time is spent at Dion's house. They work in the same space together. They eat all their meals together. That's a lot of FaceTime.
If anything, my quirks are probably more annoying to him because I can be really sassy and grumpy. I can be really moody. I'm not a morning person. And if it's after like 10:30, I turn into a small child.
We do argue a lot about when she needs to go to sleep. That's probably one of our biggest things. Someone is very stubborn and doesn't like to go to sleep when told, but I know she needs the rest.
But it's also giving them the opportunity to have conversations that they didn't have time for.
I think it also makes me a little bit vulnerable. And of course, it's a little scary to start like talking about things seriously. You know, you're in college and you're like, oh my God, I love you. Oh my gosh, we should get married one day. And now it's like, wow, we're adulting. Maybe we should get married soon.
Who knows? We might see a spike in marriages coming out of this quarantine. Or maybe when it's all over, a baby boom. For KCRW, I'm Jerome Campbell.
That's going to do it for us today. Join us Monday through Thursday at 1 and 6:30 on KCRW. Always online, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast so you can hear us anytime. Share your thoughts with us as well at kcrw.com/greaterLA. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and time. Take care of yourself. Remember to find some beauty today. There's a lot of it out there. And have a great day.